this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. A special episode today with the great Kevin Anderson. Kevin's been one of our most popular guests, and the clamor has been too loud over the last month. It's finally great to have him back on. How you doing, my friend?
Apparently, my family just keeps texting you and calling you to tell you you'll have me back on, I guess. So I appreciate the warm welcome. I'm doing good. I mean, this time of year, honestly, is like kind of Christmas for me. I love this two-week stretch between the draft and free agency. It's so intriguing to me, and the NBA offseason is just absolutely amazing. So, like, this stretch we're in the summer, at some times is better than the regular season.
I agree 100%, and I was just thinking about it. I don't even think the NFL reaches the level of excitement and interest that NBA offseason, you know, receives. And I mean, baseball and hockey aren't even in the conversation. It really extends interest in the league past the regular season. Almost in some respects, I think it's more interesting than the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like baseball, it took 4 months for like the two biggest free agents to sign. I mean, can you imagine that if we got into the middle of September and, you know, the main, like Kawhi Leonard still hadn't chosen what team he wanted to play for? Like, it's like Kawhi and even probably still Durant and Kyrie, they're going to have like chosen their team by like July 2nd, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like I can't imagine. Like, there's no other sport that just has the same level of drama and intrigue and certainly petty that the NBA has in its offseason.
Yeah, so let's get into it. I mean, first with the big news about Coby White. So I'd love to get your opinion on the kid. I mean, obviously, anyone who listens to the show and follows me on Twitter, I was really cheering hard for DeAndre Hunter. Atlanta ruined all my dreams, but in the interim, since we drafted White and I spent time watching video and reading more about him, God, it's hard not to fall in love with this kid. What say you?
Well, before we get into White, you took it really hard that DeAndre Hunter was not going to be there. When it was publicly known that, he's going to be picked early, and it was kind of a shock, I think, to everybody.
Well,
you didn't go that high. You didn't take it that well.
What happened was I was actually about an hour before the trade was announced, I was talking to Waddle and Sylvie on the air, and Sylvie asked me some kind of question, like, what is it going to take for you to be upset with tonight? You know, like, are you going to be upset about anything? And I said, the only nightmare situation I have is where Atlanta trades, you know, a cadre of their assets to move up and get Hunter. Because what I feel about Hunter, I spent a lot of time on the guy, and I just fell in love with him. I think his defensive versatility is insane. And he's exactly what Atlanta needed, to me, to kind of clean up the mess on the defensive end for Trae Young, who's an awful defender. And I thought he really kind of would bring that team to another level. And when I heard they made the trade to move up, I lost my mind. And obviously I'm embarrassed by some of the suggestions I had. I'd like to get your opinion on one of them, though, since you did help me with the cap space that the what did I say to the Knicks? Let's call the Knicks. Let's go number three. What was it? Number three
and Levine, right? Levine and seven, right?
Yeah, for Dennis Smith Jr.
Dennis Smith Jr. and number three.
Is it that insane? Is it that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty insane. like you would have done it specifically to one up the Hawks and get Hunter, right? That's the reason why you would have done the trade.
Yeah, pound sand, basically. I just wanted to tell Atlanta to pound sand. Here's RJ for you, Barrett. We're going to take DeAndre Hunter. In the long run, there would have been a good chance that RJ would have been better anyhow, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, when it comes back to, like, even though that suggestion, I hope, was a little bit sarcastic. What has kind of surprised me about Bulls Twitter in the last week or so is the segment of the population, if you will, that just completely undervalues Zach LaVine.
Yes.
And still undervalues Zach LaVine. And we're talking about a lot of people who I respect their opinions on, like our good friend Ricky O'Donnell, would be willing to, you know, quote, sell high on Zach LaVine, and they would have not necessarily for the third pick, but certainly for the fourth pick. They would have traded up, and we know that, Ricky loved Jarrett Culver. So
yeah.
I just don't understand the mindset of selling on a guy who is still like 3 years from his prime, who can clearly give you 25 a night. And I get he has defensive issues, but like Levine is just a pure scorer, and he's not just a one-trick pony. Like he's not just getting, you know, all his points from either the perimeter or from the inside. The guy can do it all offensively. So,
agreed.
Like, I don't see that mindset selling high or even selling on Levine at all right now.
I agree. In defense of my momentary insanity, I was kind of also thrown in the we would need a commitment from a max free agent to come to replace Levine, and it was kind of a move to free up cap space.
Yeah, but you're not going to get that on June 20th, though. You know, you're not going to get that commitment.
Apparently, some teams are. I don't know what the heck's going on, but it seems like everybody's under the impression Irving's coming to Brooklyn. It's ridiculous how these rules have been. Is it just me, or do you feel that same way too? That oh my gosh, there's tampering galore all over this league going on right now.
Well, I mean, I think tampering has always been behind the scenes between players. You know, certainly LeBron and Wade and Bosh back in the day. You know, it's certainly technically tampering. I mean, I can't imagine if the NBA truly investigated the Anthony Davis trade that there wasn't. You know, some actual more tampering going on behind the scenes. But, like, to your point right now, you know, I think it's probably a situation in which that Kyrie has known for a while now that he's not coming back to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And that he has told his agent, he's told his people that he's not coming back to Boston. And that he has probably also made it known to a few select teams, hey, I would be at this point very open to talking with you come June 30th. And is that technically tampering? I don't know. And there's rumors that Al Horford is going to have a four-year deal waiting for him on June 30th at 6 p.m. Eastern. So, you know, maybe that's the case. But I think there's always, you know, teams are going to talk to each other. They're going to talk to agents. Players are going to talk to their friends. They're going to talk to their agents and their managers. And it's how it is. I don't think necessarily it's bad. I don't think it's necessarily a huge black eye for the league that maybe the little guys talk to each other before free agency begins.
Agreed. So there's so much to digest here just in the last 5 minutes of some of the topics we talked about. Number one I want to go back to is I don't think there's two more polarizing players probably in our Bulls Twitter feed than you mentioned Zach LaVine already, but also Lonzo Ball, who was obviously a subject of some trade rumors in Chicago. I'd like to get your opinion on Ball first. And then also, I'd like to get your opinion. Do you feel Zach LaVine could be a piece on a title team?
So it's funny. My opinion on Ball is directly related to Zach LaVine on the Bulls. And so the reason I say that is Zach LaVine, number one, I think in terms of a piece on a title team, will Zach LaVine ever be a superstar in this league? I don't think so. And then by superstar, I mean a top five player in this league.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you know, that qualification of superstar does not extend 15 to 20 players deep in the league. We're talking about a handful of players like Kawhi, like a Durant, like a LeBron, a James Harden, Steph, right? Like we're talking
Davis.
Very few players in this league, and Giannis too. So there's probably six superstars right now in this league, and one of them's obviously going to miss the entire season. In terms of that, I don't think Zach's ceiling is a superstar. But I do think Zach's ceiling is an all-star. And I could see him being a multiple-time all-star. I could see him averaging for three or four seasons, 25 and 26 a night. I mean, that's damn good.
Very good.
If that's your ceiling, you're doing really well. And so in terms of is he a piece on a championship team, I don't think he's the number one piece. I mean, as we know, the league as it's currently constructed, you need multiple stars to win a title. And I think the exception a little bit we saw in Toronto this year with how great Kawhi was, but you also saw players play out of their minds in support of him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone would have expected what Van Fleet did this postseason and how valuable he was to that team. I mean, the guy, for God's sakes, got an NBA Finals MVP vote. He didn't win it, but he got one of the votes. I think it was Hubie Brown voting for Fred for that. And so it just speaks to how valuable he was Certainly Lowry hit some big shots during the series and played really well for them. But I don't think we're going to have too many years, and I think we can all agree that Toronto may not have won the finals if it had been a completely healthy Golden State team. So, like, I still think the blueprint that you operate on is the realistic shot of winning a title is two, if not three, stars. And so, in terms of your question, Zach LaVine, I think can be one of those three stars. I think he's probably like 1B or 2A, if you will, in that spot in terms of his potential. But getting back to your Lonzo Ball question. So the way I approach Lonzo Ball is, do I think Lonzo Ball would be a good fit with Zach LaVine, right? And so the question isn't, do you think Lonzo Ball can be a great player? Yes, he absolutely can be a great player. The question is, should the Bulls trade for Lonzo Ball, is would he be a good fit for Zach LaVine? And the original Lonzo Ball rumors were that they would trade the 7th overall pick for Lonzo Ball straight up, or would be some type of package deal where the Lakers would then take the 7th pick and, you know, the ball goes to the Bulls, and then the Pelicans, obviously, AD is involved in that trade. So the original trade that came up was Ball for the 7th pick. And my opinion on that was, no, I don't think Ball would be a good fit with Zach LaVine. And the main reason being is that Zach LaVine, to truly be the elite player that he probably can be, and certainly the elite scorer he is, he needs to have his ball in his hand, not all the time, but far more than most shooting guards. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree 100%. He's a ball-dominant player.
Yes. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, the reality of it is that in order for Zach to get points, he does not get points like Klay Thompson does. Klay Thompson does not seem to have a ball in his hand to get his points. Zach, oftentimes, he is great at creating his own shot, which is certainly a great skill to have for a player. But for Zach to really be a great scorer, he needs to have a ball in hand a fair amount of time, more than an average shooting guard. The issue with Lonzo Ball is, as good as he is defensively, and he is better defensively than Chris Dunn, and Dunn's a pretty good defensive player, but Ball is an elite, truly a great defensive player, and he's a great facilitator, a great passer. But Ball is a complete liability when he doesn't have the ball in his hand. Mm-hmm. He can't shoot at all. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about absolutely historic low free throw shooting percentage, extremely poor perimeter shooting percentage. And so if you have Zach and Lonzo in your backcourt, how is Lonzo going to be effective on the floor when Zach has the ball? And the answer is he isn't. You're like, yeah, he can set screens for guys and he can run around and maybe create a little bit of space that way. But it's a complete liability out there in terms of the defenses can completely shade away from Lonzo when Zach has the ball. I mean, anywhere on the floor other than in the paint that Lonzo is going to be, the defense can completely shade away from Lonzo. And so I think from a offensive standpoint, I don't think he'd be a good fit for Zach. I think the actual best prototype player to go with Zach is a combo guard who is a very good, if not an elite, three-point shooter. And I think that's really what the Bulls were looking for in the draft, certainly maybe what they still will look for in free agency. And that's what they want to pair with Zach LaVine. And so Lonzo Ball is not that guy. And that's not to say Lonzo Ball can't be a good shooter eventually. I mean, he's clearly very young and he can develop. But the signs right now, when you shoot 42% from the free throw line as a guard, I mean, that those numbers are so bad.
It's appalling.
It's not just it's appalling, and the sample size is a little bit small. I think he only had like 72 free throw attempts last year. But the other issue is Lonzo is afraid to make contact and get to the free throw line because he's shooting so bad.
That's a great
point. And so you've got this other weird dynamic about how he's not really a very good scorer either because he doesn't get to the rim and create contact and get to the free throw line. And so it's not like last year was a blip. I mean, 42% at the free throw line for 1 year's career free throw percentage is something like 46% free throw percentage. And so, I mean, that's really bad. He could certainly develop. He's young. He has the skill. He's got the talent. But right now, I would not have traded the 7th pick for 2 years of Lonzo Ball.
All stellar points. I mean, he's a weird player, as Coach Ron called him. I agree 100% because there are so many things to like, but when you get down to it, how can you have a point guard that is in danger of being, you know, hack a ball in a, you know, at the end as games come down to the conclusion? It's just, it's unbelievable to think that he could actually be purposely fouled as your point guard to send to the free throw line in a close game. And
yeah, now if you wanted to make the argument that get rid of Zach LaVine and bring Lonzo Ball in, I could buy that a little bit more, right? I buy that in terms of you want a true facilitator, pure point guard in your backcourt. Well, then you need a different shooting guard if that's the case, because Lonzo and Zach would be a horrible combination.
Yeah. And another thing about Lonzo, too, at some point the Bulls are going to have to factor in durability, I think. And when they pick up some of these players, and he's just not built for it. One of the scouts I really respect, Tim Gallagher, was a huge fan of Lonzo coming out, and he advocated not trading for him for that reason alone. The Bulls have had enough of those guys. So this is a good segue into the current now point guard, the new point guard, Coby White. Love to get your 4-1-1 on him. What's your take on him? Do you think this was a good pick by the beloved Bull?
So I think rarely, you know, there's often the cliche debate in sports, best available or draft for need, right? I think this is actually kind of a rare convergence that both are accurate here. I think the Bulls drafted their need, certainly, in the backcourt. I also think they drafted best available. I think that the seventh pick and where they were, that White was absolutely the right pick. He was the best available. I would not have gone with Cam Reddish there. I know there were some Bulls fans who were maybe intrigued by Cam, and certainly a lot of scouts are intrigued by Cam. But I think White was absolutely the right pick at seven, and I think he certainly has a ton of potential. If I'm being honest, I would have preferred Darius Garland. I just love Garland's skill set, and I truly believe that had Garland not gotten hurt and not torn his meniscus and played the entire year at Vanderbilt, that people last night would have been debating, should Memphis have taken Darius Garland or John Morant?
I agree.
I think there's a good chance that Garland would have gone ahead of John Morant if he had played the entire year. I think he's truly got star potential. I mean, his skill set is out of this world. His three-point range is once he steps past half court. If we're being honest, I would have preferred Garland over White. But White's got some skills, and he's got a couple of things that Garland doesn't have. I'm not all down on White. White's got a little more size. Mm-hmm. He's got a little more strength. He's going to be a better defender. White is going to be a combo guard. He can play the one or the two because of that. He can probably defend the one, two, or three in a lot of teams' opposing lineups. Garland's only 6'2", and he's really not going to guard more than one position with that size on the floor. And so White, I think, gives you a little more flexibility. White is a good three-point shooter, slightly above average. He's not elite, but again, he's really young and can develop that skill. He is a decent passer, not a great passer. He's prone to turnovers, but again, a point guard freshman that's been asked to do a lot at Carolina last year, you're gonna have some turnovers there. So I'm not truly that concerned with it, because I think that's something that can be taught with experience and taught with more reps. But I really like the pick at White. I think it was the absolute correct choice for the Bulls to make at seven. And I think Bulls fans are going to love seeing him play next year. If the Bulls do what Paxson said they were going to do, and that is get out and run more and play a more up-tempo style, then that was the absolute right pick. I mean, the thing with White is he runs downhill nearly every single play. He's one of the fastest players by all scouting reports. He's one of the fastest players in the draft. Extremely quick. The guy has a little Darren Fox in me. Reminds me of Darren Fox in him. And I think there's going to be a lot of fans who cannot wait to see when Zach and White get out on the fast break, see how they're going to run together. And, you know, the thing is, that's really good with this roster. With a healthy lineup, all five guys can run. And all five guys can get up and down the floor. So as long as Borland is coaching them to be up-tempo, and he's not yelling at them to slow down the ball once they get past half court, then they're going to be fun to watch. And I'm not necessarily going to win 45 games, but they're certainly going to be much more fun to watch and score a lot more points. And I think a huge part of that is going to be Coby White.
I wish the season started tomorrow. Just hearing you speak for the last few minutes here, because you're right. Thinking of Zach LaVine and this kid, how fast this kid is on a break. It's going to be exciting stuff. Let's go to round two, though. I mean, that was a pretty interesting moment where Bo Ball's still on the board. The Bulls take Daniel Gafford from Arkansas. And, you know, I was with Ramina and a few other people who Bull scripted. Keith Franz was really high on Gafford, who was a lottery pick last year, projected lottery pick, goes back to school and obviously hurt him significantly this year. Love to get your 411 on Gafford. Do you think this you know, he's got a chance of being a difference maker in the NBA?
Well, the interesting thing is that if we're being honest and we look at traditionally second-round picks, right, they're not guaranteed contracts for a reason. They're rookie minimum contracts for a reason. Is that if a team can get a rotation player out of a second-round pick, you've had a pretty good pick.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get a starter out of a second-round pick, you've hit an absolute grand slam and done great. Not everybody's going to be able to pick Draymond Green in the second round, right? So in terms of, like, the expectation, you know, we certainly could talk about that a little bit, not to rub some salt and some wounds there with fans. But in regards to Gafford, you know, the big knock a lot of fans had was that he is a traditional low-post good defender, low post scorer, can't spread the floor though. That doesn't necessarily bother me that much. I think the drafting of Gafford signals that Robin Lopez will not be back next year in a Bulls uniform. I think you're going to essentially see Gafford as your backup five. I think they're still going to sign another veteran big in free agency, probably Taj Gibson. And I think Gafford is going to be essentially probably the ninth or tenth guy in a rotation. Because to be honest, Fred, I think you're going to see when Wendell comes out of the game, I think you're going to see Markkanen slide to the five a lot next season.
Agreed.
And so expectations for Gafford aren't really that high. I think he's just a guy who needs to come in and he needs to be a really good defender, which the team obviously needs on the interior, regardless of who's out there on the perimeter. And, you know, expectations for him, if they can get Gafford and have him be a solid back end of the rotation guy, 8, 9, 10 in the rotation, I think then it's a good pick. In terms of Bol, Bol's got a lot of upside. He's kind of a fan favorite, and obviously his dad's Manute, and, you know, people love Manute too. There was a reason that Bol fell to 44, right? Teams have concerns about his durability, concerned about his long-term sustainability in this league. He's got a really unique skill set, being with his size and his three-point shooting ability, which means that literally there's not a player in the league who could block his jump shot. And that's a really, like, intriguing aspect to have, and I can see why teams and even fans would be kind of enamored by that. But I don't think Bol would have necessarily been the right pick for the Bulls.
So you made an interesting point there about Markkanen sliding to the five with the first substitution, which I do agree with. Do you feel Hutch or Porter Jr. are then going to slide to the four, or do you think that player is going to be in the four there when Laurie goes to the five is yet to be signed?
So I think it's going to be a combination of, I don't know if Hutch necessarily slide to the four. Like, there's still a lot of question marks with Hutch. I think Otto sliding to the four is certainly a strong possibility to happen in a lot of lineups. But I also think that we're probably looking at a free agent that may be playing that role too, whether it's Taj or somebody else. So that answer, ask me in about 10 days from now, and I may have a better answer for you for that one.
Good. Okay. All right. So now we're getting to the big question at hand, where I think we're going to have a little bit of disagreement here. I think we both agree that just because we drafted a point guard, that does not preclude the Bulls from signing a veteran point guard. We both agree that.
I agree completely. In fact, I would say that drafting a rookie point guard would actually make it more likely you need to sign a veteran point guard in free agency.
Agree 100%. To that end, I my personal opinion is Patrick Beverley should still be our primary target. Now, obviously, a lot going on with the Lakers and a lot of teams that have an interest in this kid. And I've been reading a lot, and I do agree with this assertion that his price tag is probably going to be raised to the $15 million range. We also have Malcolm Brogdon out there, who's probably going to cost about $20 million. So let's go start out. Let's start out with Patrick Beverley. What number do you feel is a good contract to sign him at in terms of dollars per year and length of contract? And where would you stop? What would you not go over?
So in terms of, so they're obviously related. I'm okay going higher on the dollars per year, shorter on the contract term. So like we saw the report today that he may be expecting upwards of $15 million per year. I'm okay if that's a two-year deal. I'm okay if the Bulls sign Beverley at 2 years for $30 million. It's short-term, that it's the perfect amount of time that he can mentor Kobe White, that can help be a veteran presence in this locker room. I think that's the perfect amount of time at that dollar price. If you start going to 3 or 4 years, there's absolutely no way I'm signing Patrick Beverley to 3 or 4 year deal with $15 million per. I think that's a way overpay. If we're talking about a 3 or 4 year deal, then I'm talking, I would be more comfortable in the $10 to $12 million range, ideally 8 to 12 for that. But it sounds like the market for Beverley is not what that is. And I don't know if Beverly's going to want to take a shorter term deal with the Bulls if another team like the Clippers is going to say, hey, let's give you 3 for $45 or 4 for $55, right?
Yeah.
If that's the case, Beverly probably makes that decision. But I don't think that would be the right decision for the Bulls to do that. I like Beverly. I think he would be a great fit for this team. Obviously, his defensive ability, his attitude, he's a Jim Boylan type player, isn't he? I mean, he's got that road dog mentality. He doesn't give an F who he plays. He'll just take on anyone defensively. He's got a chip on his shoulder, which I think is good to have, and he could teach Kobe how to operate in this league and then how to be a point guard in this league, how to be successful in this league. And so when it comes down to it, Beverly's a really good fit, and I really would like to see Beverly on the Bulls. I just don't think that Beverly's the right fit at $60 million or $45 million for 3 years.
Well, yeah, that's a great point because, I mean, 3 years, obviously next year's free agent class isn't great, but the following year, I believe, is Giannis and, you know, some other good players. So I think the Bulls are kind of targeting that offseason as a potential one to have their powder keg dry and potentially sign a big-time player. Giannis, obviously, probably going to be the primary target for any team. So, yeah, if you go in 3 years, and obviously that's going to affect your cap space in that season. What about Malcolm Brogdon? And this is a really interesting one because I think he's one of the few guys that was a 50-40-90 guy last year. And
he's the only one. He's the only player in the league who was 50-40-90.
Unbelievable. So he's, to me, a very good fit, too. Do you like him also? And if so, at what number?
So if they hadn't gotten the point guard in the draft, let's say they'd gotten Culver, and I would have been fine if they had gotten Culver in the draft. I think their primary target should have been Malcolm Brogdon. Even though he's a restricted free agent, even if it would have taken $17, $18, $19 million a year to get Brogdon, I think Brogdon is a great fit for Zach LaVine. Great fit. I mean, he's an elite three-point shooter. I think he would have been perfect with LaVine in the backcourt. But the fact that they got Kobe White, and this kind of goes back to my whole argument for why you don't sign a long-term, costly deal with Patrick Beverley. If you truly believe White has potential to be a, not even necessarily a star in this league, but a very good point guard, a top 10 point guard in this league, doesn't have to be an all-star, but if you believe that White can be a starting point guard in a playoff caliber team, why are you then going to sign a free agent to a four-year deal worth a lot of money that essentially would have Brogdon start over White the whole time? I mean, and if you get to a point where White overtakes Brogdon as the starter, or certainly you get to the point in which White would overtake Beverley as the starter, you're paying a lot of money for a reserve. You're paying way too much money for a reserve.
Yeah.
And then you have a bad contract. We still have Zach LaVine under contract for three more years. in your backcourt, 19.5 per, which is actually, honestly, a really good deal. Sure Despite is. All the flack a lot of people gave last year for the Bulls with signing that, it's actually a very good deal right now. And with the cap increasing a little bit every year, it gets better every single year because Zach's contract is actually flat. It's 19.5 per all 4 years. And so the deal literally is a better deal every year that it gets by. It doesn't have that built-in increase to it. So I would not sign Brogdon right now because I think it would take $18 to $20 million to get him. And even then, if you sign an off Brogdon an offer sheet, I'm not really convinced that the Bucks don't match it. I mean, they freed up some cap space, and I think they really like Brogdon. And so I wouldn't be convinced that you would get him anyway. He's not unrestricted. So, to Brogdon, your point on Brogdon, I would actually pass on Brogdon now with them taking Kobe White number 7.
So let's say they sign Beverly. I want to go back to Beverly because here's a case I would make with Beverly. I understand we're overpaying Porter. I think anyone who objectively looks at this situation, Porter's probably – I think anywhere from $8 to $10 million overpaid for what he brings to the team. I think if he was on the open market, realistically, he should make somewhere between $17 and $20 million a year. He's making 26 or 27, so he's overpaid by a bit. But you also look at this team: Laurie Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. for what they bring are making a combined 10.5, right? So there's a delta there in how good they are, right? If it was a free agent market, I think they both make considerably more. So the Bulls are going to be in this situation for the next 2 years. They're still on the upswing. I think the value of what a player like Patrick Beverley brings in terms of leadership, setting an example, showing these young kids how to play hard, to me it's worth overpaying by $3 or $4 million. And I would argue that a two-year contract at $15 million with a team option for a third at that same amount, I'd do it. I do it because what else are we going to do in this?
Yeah, team option, I agree. I mean, those are very good points. And, yes, if you can get a team option that third year, I'm 100% on board with that because essentially you then only have 2 years guaranteed on that deal. It's when you get into a situation where it's a three-year deal with a fourth-year player option or even a two-year deal with a third-year player option. That becomes a little bit tricky, and then you got to really look at, okay, is this the right move right now? Beverly is, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30, and he still obviously has got a lot left in the tank and is a great competitor. And is still productive right now, but is he going to be productive at age 33 or age 34? I don't know, and that's kind of a risk you're taking with that. But here's a name I will give you, somebody who I think the Bulls will look at, and that's a veteran point guard, Corey Joseph.
Mm, yep.
Played in San Antonio when Jim Boylan was there. It's my understanding that Boylan respects his play style and respects who he is as a player. I would not be surprised if you see Joseph's name linked with the Bulls come June 30th and July 1st and July 2nd. He's a guy that they could get, I think, relatively cheap, under $10 million. And I think he is a guy who you could won't get the defensive ability to get out of Patrick Beverley, but you certainly can count on Joseph to help mentor Kobe in this situation. And the kind of irony is we've talked for almost a half hour now. We haven't talked about Chris Dunn even once.
Yeah, I was going to get
John Paxson said on our podcast last night with Schnowski and Kendall and Will that he thinks drafting Kobe White can be good for Chris Dunn. And he still believes in Chris Dunn, and he thinks the competitive nature of Chris Dunn, this is going to be a good thing. I'm not entirely convinced that Chris Dunn's going to be on the opening night roster, but we'll see. We'll see what they do in free agency.
So that's where I want to go. On this last question, interesting note, I think Corey Joseph was actually the pick immediately before Jimmy Butler in the 2012 draft by the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, a little ironic there, 29th overall.
There you go. So let's assume they strike out for a point guard in free agency and they go into this training camp with Chris Dunn, obviously Kobe, and I like Shaq Harrison, so let's say Shaq Harrison's their third point guard. Who starts on opening night?
So of all the positions in the NBA, that is the most difficult to be a rookie, it's point guard.
Yes.
It's not even close. It's really hard to be a rookie point guard and be an effective rookie point guard. So I don't know if Kobe is going to be ready for that. I mean, certainly a lot of what happens at the training camp is going to determine opening night. I would say that regardless of what happens in free agency, if they sign Patrick Beverley, they sign Corey Joseph, they, Chris Dunn's still on the roster, I don't think White is your opening night starter. But at the same time, he could really show the coaching staff something in training camp, and he could win that position. They just have to be a little bit more careful with him because it's really hard to be a point guard in your rookie season. You've got so much to think about. You've got so many things to think about off the floor and on the floor. You essentially can't just think about what your assignment is. You got to think about what all four or five guys' assignment is and where they need to be and what's happening on every single given play with all five guys, not just yourself. It's tough to run. And so that's why it takes a while. That's why you don't see too many rookie point guards win Rookie of the Year. Derrick Rose certainly being the exception.
Yeah, it's going to be fun because I do feel, Chris Dunn's career is in the balance now. I mean, he's been completely disrespected this offseason with, I think, a lot of comments from the front office, and obviously they drafted a point guard. They don't believe in him. And, sometimes people respond to that and show and really decide to kind of rise up and show them what they're made of. I still have a little bit of belief in Chris Dunn. I know this. I really believe in him as arguably the best backup in the NBA at the point guard position because that guy can play D when he wants to. So I'm really excited about this season. To wrap this baby up, Kev, right now let's assume they sign Pat Bev. They get that other backup four or five and Taj Gibson. How many wins?
Let's say that's your free agency. I mean, you still have probably a third free agent they may want to look at. If you bring in Beverly, you sign Taj, healthy roster, I probably honestly would put them at where I would have projected them last year, which is about 35 to 37 wins, with a lot that still has to go right. Certainly injuries completely derailed the season last year. That's why you finished with 60 losses, or at least a huge reason why you finished with 60 losses. But I'd say a healthy team right now with still a lot of room to grow, I put them at 35 to 37 wins next year.
Kevin, you're a prince among men. What's going on at the NBC Sports Chicago? What do we have on tap for the next 30 to 60 days?
So we have, first off, on our NBCSportsChicago.com, we've got a ton of content from the NBA draft. We've got a podcast that includes the entire conversation that Mark, Will, and Kendall have with John Paxson after the draft at the Advocate Center. You don't want to miss that. We also have some really cool content with Kobe White. Coming up on June 30th, we are having a free agency special at 6:30 p.m. that will be on our NBC Sports Chicago main channel, channel 200 if you're on the Xfinity here in the city. And so we'll be, Mark and Kendall, will be going through free agency as it starts, as it happens live, reacting to it. We'll have some interviews with that, probably with Tom Havistro and a couple of our other national writers, and just to figure out what's happening in the opening hours of free agency. But more important, we have coming up June 27th, a week from last night, so next Thursday, we have a special Bulls Outsiders at Peck versus C-Red Fred edition, 7 p.m. on NBC Sports Chicago's Facebook channel. We are having a no-holds-barred political-style debate between you and Matt Peck. I know you've been looking forward to this. I mean, how are you feeling about that 6 days out right now?
Well, I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to this. You should see my basement. I've written out every potential Peck argument. It looks like a beautiful mind down there with all the X's and O's where he could go with these. I'm completely prepared. And I feel this is a Heart of Bulls Nation, a battle for the Heart of Bulls Nation. I'm looking at this as an opportunity to convince as many of the millions who will be watching as possible that it's time for optimism with this team and the direction of the organization. And let's put our childish ways aside and let's get on board and realize that there are great things ahead for the beloved Bull. What say you?
So I'll give you a little preview of what to expect in that show for you, because certainly you'll be on it, but also your listeners as well. So it's going to be a debate style where essentially you're one candidate and Matt is the other candidate. Our other Bulls outsiders, Big Dave Watson, who you know very well, is a good friend of yours, and John Sabine will act as hosts and moderators of this debate. And so how we're going to do it, they're going to start the show. You and Matt will both have an opening statement. Your opening statement, we're going to try and keep brief, 60 seconds, maybe a minute and a half. Okay. You're going to tell the viewers why you are the true voice of the Chicago Bulls fan. And so after that, we're then going to go into five different topics, which you will get a general theme ahead of time, but you're not going to get the exact debate topic ahead of time. And Matt's not going to get them either. Dave, John, and I are spending hours going over the right topics to generate debate between the two of you. So we're going to have opening statement, five different topics to debate. We'll give you the main themes and what the general idea of the topic is. And then there'll be a closing statement. And then we're going to have John and Dave and our viewing audience decide who the winner is.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
If one of the topics isn't Jabari Parker, I just wasted the last 3 weeks. I can't tell you.
I mean, we might have a Jabari Parker. We might have a Dwayne Wade in there. You know, we're gonna have topics that are going to certainly generate some fun and maybe some animosity. I don't know if that's the right word. Certainly some reactions from the two of you. I'll put it that way.
Our mutual friend Ramina, the Queen of Bulls Twitter, has requested her presence at this event. I don't know if you can pull some strings, but.
I wasn't aware of that. Okay, I'll have to get contact with Ramina, and we'll see what we can do. But for everybody else, it'll be on NBC Sports Chicago's Facebook page, 7 o'clock on Thursday, June 27th. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, Kevin, it's an honor. I can't thank you enough for this opportunity to speak for Bulls Nation, and you know I will bring come prepared and bring my A game, and I'm sure Mr. Peck will as a he's a very formidable opponent. I can't think of a more difficult opponent. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, this is something that I think Bulls Twitter has been clamoring for. I mean, this is true two heavyweights on opposite ends of the spectrum that will be going at it. I mean, this is like the thrill of Manila, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see what we get.
All right, my man. It's always great talking to you. I got to call our mutual friend Mark Kay from Australia. Anything you want me to tell him?
Yeah, tell him that I love the frenemy style banter that you and Mark have together. It's absolutely a delight, and I love seeing it every day on my feed. And tell him that despite what the North Dakota State scientists have said, that you're probably wrong more than 7% of the time.
Are you sure you don't want me to just tell him to pound sand? I think that would be a lot more.
You could. Yeah, you might as well. You're going to anyway.
All right, Kev, man. You're the best, brother. Talk to you again soon, man. Thanks again for the time
tonight.
Thank you,
Fred. Talk to you.
Bye-bye.